Hello, this is Kathleen, and today, Monday, April 6th, I'll be reading to you from the Daily News of Newburyport. Proposal Raises Concerns at Dispensaries by Caitlin D. Salisbury. Local dispensaries are concerned about a proposed ballot question that would repeal laws which legalized the retail sale of recreational marijuana in Massachusetts. The November ballot initiative, called An Act to Restore a Sensible Marijuana Policy, is looking to change the type and amount of marijuana that may be legally possessed in Massachusetts by repealing the laws that legalize, regulate, and tax the retail sale of adult recreational use marijuana in Massachusetts, a summary of initiative petitions said. Previously, Massachusetts residents voted by a wide margin to legalize recreational marijuana for people over the age of 21 in 2016. Now those in the recreational marijuana business are preparing to defend their industry. Tom Reagan, CEO of Root and Bloom and Road Trip Dispensary, cannabis businesses based in Salisbury, said he was not expecting to see a ballot question like this put forth. "I was very surprised to hear it, and not just because I'm in the industry. In my opinion, it had already been decided by the voters," he said. Scott Winters, Director of Business Development and Community Outreach at CNA Stores, a cannabis dispensary and cultivator with locations in Amesbury and Haverhill, said if the proposed ballot question is ultimately successful, it would be detrimental in more ways than one. "There are so many reasons why this would be wrong and harmful. The jobs would go away. The choices would go away. Just about everything would go away," he said. While the proposed ballot question seeks to repeal the laws that legalize the retail sale of recreational marijuana in the state, Reagan said that doing so likely would not stop consumers from seeking it out. "The demand will not go away. It will just change from a regulated to an unregulated environment. I mean, we do a lot of testing. We spend a lot of money on testing for anything from potency to heavy metals to toxins," he said. Winters echoed that statement and said repealing the laws could push consumers to purchase marijuana in nearby states or on the black market instead, which could pose risks. "There is a whole bunch of reasons why black market product is black market product. If it could pass Massachusetts testing, or any kind of testing, it wouldn't be black market," he said. Winters also said CNA has already begun reaching out to community members to inform them about what could be at stake. "We're starting to talk with our neighbors, just like we did back in 2014, 2015, 2016, and kind of having to do that whole thing all over again," he said. Artists at work. Students learn how to paint with oils. It may have been opening day for the Red Sox on Friday in Boston, but in Newburyport, it was the perfect day to learn how to paint with longtime local artist Rob Bruhn. His introduction to oil painting at the Newburyport Senior Community Center drew about a dozen budding artists as Bruhn demonstrated his skill and expertise. Port Rec hosts Derby Fundraiser by Matt Petrie, Newburyport. The Port Youth and Rec Foundation is hoping to see folks come out in their finest seersucker suits and fascinator hats on May 2nd when it hosts its first Kentucky Derby fundraiser at the Newburyport Senior Community Center. "We're looking to really revitalize our events and bring more of the community in, Port Youth and Rec Foundation President Elizabeth Lukens said. Port Youth and Rec Foundation is a nonprofit dedicated to supporting the city's Recreation and Youth Services Department. The fundraiser, Port Derby 26, is set to begin at 5:30 p.m. with a 5 p.m. VIP early entry. All proceeds will go directly to department programs, supporting everything from youth programming to community events that serve residents of all ages. Having recently become an organization president, Lukens explained that in looking for new ideas for events that are not already overcrowded, her board quickly realized there was not much competition around the Kentucky Derby. We're in this great area. We've got this beautiful waterfront. We've got the boating community. And we've looked at a couple of different options, Lukens said. We're kind of kept coming back to this. We've all been to the derby parties, and they're super fun. They're kind of silly to a point where, with your crazy hat, there's a competitive side. Everyone's yelling at the TV. In addition to watching the derby, the evening is set to include a Southern-style dinner catered by Salisbury barbecue restaurant Smoke on the Water, a cash bar, a silent auction, a wine pull, a horse pull for folks to have a rooting interest in the derby, and a best hat contest. It's one thing to ask for money, but it's another thing to actually invite people out to have a good time and have us benefit from that, Lukens said. Every dollar we raise that doesn't pay for the event goes right back to the Newburyport Recreation and Youth Center. She said auction items range from golf trips to driver's education packages. The local businesses have been great, really supportive, Lukens said. I think there is a big push behind the rec and youth services, because depending on your age level, a lot of people's children went through it, Lukens said. In terms of decor for the party, she said the foundation president, Vice President Jasmine McDonald, is going to transform the senior center. She's working with Smith & Sullivan, the new antique shop, Lukens said. They're going to donate some old trophies and decor to really spice up the place. We're hoping it'll be nice enough to be outside as well. Recreation and Youth Services Director Andy Egmont said she cannot say enough about what the foundation's board is doing to support the work of her department. I think people often forget that our department, all of our departments and programs, are funded by user fees, donations, and grants, Egmont said. So knowing that we have a group who is working toward raising funds specifically to the support and that make sure that our programs are affordable and accessible to everyone is really important. The new fundraiser comes at an exciting time as Recreation and Youth Services Center at 59 Low Street continues to take shape. On May 13th, voters approved a $6.5 million debt exclusion to pay for most of the city's $8.3 million plan to build the center. The complex will include a gymnasium, lobby, offices for RYS staff, a flexible art and maker space, an early education area, meeting and quiet study space, as well as multi-purpose space. A half basketball court will be built outside to go along with a new patio, enclosed play space, and open lawn area. Ground was broken on the project in September. Officials confirmed in March that the project remains on pace for completion in November. Tickets for the fundraiser are available now at portyouthrecfoundation.org/derby, and some sponsorship opportunities are still available. The Institution for Savings is presenting sponsor. New fitness equipment comes to COA by Matt Petrie, Newburyport. Two treadmills and a rowing machine are among the new pieces of equipment that will be available at the Newburyport Senior Community Center late this month as the Council of Aging reopens its second floor fitness center. The items, along with a recumbent bike and an elliptical, come courtesy of a $25,333 gift from the Friends of Newburyport Council on Aging. The City Council unanimously accepted the gift at its meeting March 23rd. Ward 6 City Councilor Mary DeLay, who toured the COA prior to the gift acceptance, said Friday she is grateful to the organization for the donation. It is wonderful that our seniors have access to this amazing equipment so they can remain physically active, supporting their physical, emotional, and cognitive health, DeLay said. COA Director Sarah Landry said they are setting up all the equipment. We also have a new TV, Landry said. We have weights. We're going to be getting in there, which we'll be covering through our program, a weight rack and a new bench, because the goal is to have a small group classes in there as well as do some training. She said once the room is reopened, it will be a bit different than the previous walk-in atmosphere. People will have to check in at the front desk and get a key to use the room, because everyone that uses it will need to be trained properly, Landry said. It used to be you could just kind of willy-nilly go in and out of the room. The main reason for the change is liability. We are going to make sure that everyone is trained, Landry said. They need to understand how to use it. They need to know how to use the TV because it's high-tech equipment now. It has monitors. The treadmills have 19-inch screens on them. So they're really nice, but especially like the rowing machine and stuff, I want to make sure that everyone is trained on them correctly. The hope is to open the room for training April 14th. People will need to come in and register for a class, Landry said. If they're thinking they might want to use the equipment, then they do have to go through training and they will need a consent form. One reason the room is not yet open is because one of the new pieces of equipment was not properly calibrated, according to Landry. So the support staff has to come in and recalibrate it and fix that, she said. That's why when we got the equipment in, I didn't just say, oh, the new equipment's here. It's going to be open tomorrow. The equipment that was replaced had been around for about a decade, Landry said. It is important to offer a refurbished fitness room to seniors, noting that for many a gym membership or at-home gym is cost prohibitive. We wanted to make sure that folks who couldn't afford being a member in a club were able to get access to fitness equipment because it's all part of their membership here, which is free, Landry said. It's all part of the wellness of the person. As I See It, an Easter food drive to feed the hungry by William Lambers. It was 80 years ago when Easter inspired one of the most important food drives in the history to feed the world's hungry. This was just 1 year after World War II, and there was starvation occurring in the devastated countries of Europe and Asia. To prevent the biggest famine in history needed the heroic efforts of the American people by saving food, donating to relief efforts overseas, and encouraging their elected officials to take action. At Easter in 1946, Americans were answering the call to action, and communities set up fundraising events for the food drive. The Hartford Courant reported that Connecticut churches united to raise funds to feed war victims. In New York City, church leaders asked parishioners to skip the flowers for Easter displays and instead use the money for the food drive. Newspapers like the Los Angeles Times published details on how people can save food to feed the hungry and encouraged readers to educate others about the crisis. At the highest level, President Harry Truman canceled Easter events in Washington, D.C. to save food. The more Americans could save, the more they could donate. This inspiring Easter was actually one filled with the canceling of traditional holiday events in the interest of saving food. By saving lives from hunger, that is what made it one of the greatest Easter holidays ever. 80 years later, we could sure use an Easter food drive to help relieve the escalating hunger worldwide, and also to support food banks in America. Especially with the war with Iran impacting global hunger, such as food drive takes on even more urgency. In America, gas prices are rising, food prices are high, and expected to climb even further because of the Iran war. That is going to be tough on families who are struggling to put food on the table. They are going to need the help of food banks throughout America that are already overwhelmed with demand. Donating to your local food bank or church food drive can help relieve hunger at home. Overseas, there is extreme hunger in many countries like war-torn Sudan and Congo that need our help. But sadly, there have been many cuts to global food aid programs in the past year, which is tragic because the needs are rising. In the Central African Republic, they are battling hunger, but also taking in refugees from Sudan's war. There needs to be more support for these impoverished communities aiding hungry refugees. The Middle East already has severe hunger in Gaza, Yemen, Syria, and Lebanon. The Iran war will make this level of hunger worse in the Middle East and beyond. The UN World Food Program, WFP, warns that the total number of people around the world facing acute levels of hunger could reach record numbers in 2026 if the escalation in the Middle East continues to destabilize the world's economy. You can help by donating to hunger-fighting charities like WFP, UNICEF, Catholic Relief Services, Save the Children, CARE, Mercy Corps, Red Cross, EDICEA, Norwegian Refugee Council, Mary's Meals, Action Against Hunger, and many others. Like the Greatest Generation did in 1946, you can help the Easter food drive by donating to charities, preventing food waste, and encouraging your elected officers to take action. Back in 1946, President Harry Truman sent former President Herbert Hoover on a world tour to gather food supplies. Acting as a food ambassador, Hoover led the way in organizing a global response to prevent famine. Every one of us today can also be a food ambassador, encouraging action to feed the hungry at home and abroad. The Greatest Generation's dedication to feeding the hungry in 1946 saved the world from mass starvation and helped build a post-war peace. Today's generation can do something great this Easter, saving lives and winning peace by feeding the hungry. William Lambers is an author who partnered with the UN World Food Program on the book Ending World Hunger. His writings have been published by the Washington Post, Newsweek, Hartford Courant, Cleveland Day Plain Dealer, History News Network, and many news outlets. Lambers volunteered to write the Hunger Heroes section of WFP's online learning game, Free Rice. Salisbury Lions Club makes Easter special for local seniors, by Caitlin D. Salisbury. A number of local seniors were able to enjoy an Easter meal this weekend, thanks to the work of the Salisbury Lions Club and the local Council on Aging. The Lions Club, a community service group that gives back to the town, typically donates meals to both families and seniors in need on Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Easter each year. However, this Easter, there were not any requests for family meals, allowing the Lions Club to solely focus on providing 20 meals for seniors. A.J. Pappas, president of the club, said the process is a collaborative effort with the Council on Aging. We reach out to the Senior Center, the Council on Aging, and ask them what their needs are. And they come up with a number, he said, about how the number of meals is determined. Once the need is established, Lions Club members go out and pick up the food that will be included in the meal, such as a ham, potatoes, vegetables, a pie, and more. Then members of the club assemble the meals and put them into bags at the Hilton Senior Center before they are delivered to or picked up by seniors. There is also an option that the food be plated if seniors do not have the ability to do so themselves. What we'd like to do is we'd like to take the bags home, make up the meals, and put them in a microwavable dish so they can just heat it up in the microwave. Cindy Emery, kitchen and food pantry manager at the Council on Aging, said of the preparation. Emery also said the COA is grateful for the Lions Club's ongoing efforts to give back to local seniors. We'd love to thank the Lions Club, especially for all they do for the seniors, because that's a big help to us, she said. Diane May, treasurer of the Salisbury Lions Club, said helping to assemble for the meals for different holidays is one of the most fulfilling things she does as a member of the Lions Club. It is amazing, she said. Similarly, Pappas said club members are happy to be able to make a positive impact on the lives of their neighbors. We love it. That's what community service is all about. If we're able to do it, we're so happy that we can, he said. Lynn Welch, a member of the Salisbury Lions Club, also said she was glad that because of their efforts, Easter meals are accessible to local seniors. It's nice to know that even if it's just a single person, they get that meal. They get to sit down and break bread like everyone else on Easter without the struggle, especially right now with the cost of everything, she said. Politicians Pack Reception in Support of Disability Services by Jonah Frangiosa, staff writer, Haverhill. Caregivers, legislators, and advocates gathered Thursday morning as a call for support as many disability services and support systems are at stake. People filled the Tech Center at Northern Essex Community College for a legislative reception hosted by the ARC of Greater Haverhill Newburyport and the Merrimack Valley Citizens Advisory Board to the Merrimack Valley Department of Developmental Services. Advocates and people with disabilities shared breakfast with elected officials at the local, regional, and state levels. Everyone came together to support of the disabled community amid growing uncertainty concerning funding and policy. The event opened with a performance by the Spectrum of Sound Choir from the Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism. The group of six singers delivered renditions of popular songs, including Journey's Don't Stop Believing and David Guetta's Titanium. Andrea Morris, the ARC Director of Family Supports and Advocacy, and Mary Kate Marnianak, co-chair of the Citizens Advisory Board, welcomed the crowd and introduced the event's theme, Building a Stronger Community Together. We build a stronger community by building strong support networks with peer mentoring and social groups, Morris said. Disability advocates have spoken out against a proposed $100 million cut to the Massachusetts Personal Care Attendant Program within the fiscal year 2027 budget proposal, along with other financial concerns that could restrict services. Lieutenant Governor Kim Driscoll delivered remarks, recognizing the importance of disability services, health care, and other programs while discussing budgeting. We are trying to prioritize every dollar we have and use it the best way possible, Driscoll said. We want to make sure that you have what you need to feel supported, to feel and stay healthy, to stay in your community. She referenced an executive order signed by Governor Healey last month that established a statewide strategy to better support adults over age 22 on the autism spectrum, particularly those with profound autism. Kimball said this legislative process does not affect just the state, but the country as well. When we do things in this state, other states, and frankly the federal government, take notice of that and try to do better, Driscoll said. So when we are leading, we're actually helping beyond just our communities. We're helping others across the entire nation. Additional speakers included DDS Commissioner Sarah Peterson, former State Representative and Senator Barbara Letalian, and State Representative Tram Nguyen. Letalian is a longtime advocate of disability policy and has worked at the intersection of law, healthcare, and government for more than 25 years. She is the parent of a son on the autism spectrum, and helped found the Autism Association and Neurodiversity. She now serves as the executive director of the Disability Law Center, focusing on systemic policy and legislative advocacy. On Wednesday, she echoed others' call for support to preserve services for those with disabilities, as did Peterson and Nguyen. The program also featured personal stories from disabled people who are receiving such services and are members of the ARC. Arthur Rutherford, who sustained a life-changing brain injury as a child, describes how DDS support and services from the ARC have enabled him to live independently, work, and stay connected to his community. Due to his condition, he said there were a number of challenges in his upbringing. I wanted to quit, but not anymore. I believe that what you go through shapes you, Rutherford said. He warned that potential funding cuts could jeopardize his independence, limiting his ability to work, volunteer, and access essential services. David Tweedy, a 25-year-old North Andover resident with Down syndrome, spoke alongside his father, Bob. Through the MassHealth Adult Foster Care Program, he receives in-home support and opportunities for employment and community engagement. Tweedy works at Central Catholic High School in Lawrence and holds a weekend job at the Loft in North Andover. His father credited strong support systems, including legislative backing, for his development. With your help, I am going to continue to grow and continue to jump for joy, Tweedy said. Thank you for all of your support. Jared Howland, a Haverhill resident born with cerebral palsy, also shared his story alongside his parents, Donna and Glenn. Through the ARC's AFC program and supportive mother and father, Howland lives a fun-filled life of therapeutic horseback riding, boating, and more adaptive sports. The reception closed with a call to action from Nora Bent, Director of Government Affairs and Strategic Partnerships for the ARC. We're living in unprecedented and frightening times where so many of the services that matter to all of us in this room are at risk due to funding cuts and policy changes coming out of Washington, D.C., Bent said. She urged the audience to advocate for continued support by contacting legislators and engaging with the ARC's efforts. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you all have a safe and well day.